RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. If you want to get in touch with us, please do so. It's crushperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter as we link you up to the world of performance. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, I've started a Facebook group just learning this whole social media thing. It's called The Talent Grid. Get in. There's some people, athletes, scientists, parents, coaches who've joined the group, and it's been a ton of fun. A lot of reputable coaches in professional sports. We've got pro athletes in there, some great sports scientists as well, just talking sport performance. So there's many, many ways to get in touch as we help you think like an athlete. And today, we're going to do exactly that as we wrap up the NFL season with a look at the Super Bowl and the injury and player safety movement that's going on in the game of football. Today on the show, we're going to look at some cool and alarming and interesting stats coming out of the NFL in terms of the Super Bowl. And we'll talk with Crush favorite, Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neurologist and associate professor at the University of Alberta, about the new alarmingly high concussion stats coming out of the NFL this last season. Do we need to be concerned? The numbers are up in terms of reported concussions during the season by 58%. And it's a topic of conversation in terms of the sport and player safety. And that being said, everybody knows who listens to the show how much we love technology, especially when it gets involved in helping athletes perform, but maybe even more so when it impacts player safety inside of sport. We're going to talk with Dr. David Broud, sideline neurologist for the Seahawks. He's also the co-founder of Visus, who have developed an incredible new helmet called the Zero One. We'll look at the technology and how it's going to improve player safety and maybe save the game moving forward. So we got a jam-packed day today. You know, con man, listen, I was just going through the calendar and I'm looking at the sport calendar that's coming up and what we've seen here over the last few months. It's a fantastic time in sports. We have major sporting events rolling out one after the other after the other. We had the Australian Open in tennis. We have, of course, the NHL All-Star Game. We have the Phoenix Open. We had the NBA All-Star Game coming up in Toronto, which is a big one, by the way, for the first time in Canada. And also, a few people know this, but Canada's beginning to be a powerhouse in terms of development of high-end basketball players. 9 first-round drafts in the last 5 years. And of course, as we talk and as we speak, in Sydney, Australia, the first ever World Baseball Classic qualifier gets underway as my beloved South Africa takes on my other beloved New Zealand. It's a fantastic time in sport.
Crush, who are you pulling for in that one? You got to be honest, because I know you have a friend who's coaching for New Zealand, but you spent some time in South Africa. I mean, it's got to be a tough one for you.
We've worked with South Africa for the last 10 years, helping build their infrastructure in terms of player development and their national team program. And it's been incredible to see the number of professional athletes signing out of South Africa right now. And the great thing about that program, it's not just South Africa, but it's the entire continent. So we have players coming down from the entire continent to raise the level of the game over in Africa. And, you know, it's a tough one. I've spent 10 years there. We've also had some ties in Australia and New Zealand, helping their players develop. But Chris Woodward, a good friend, of course, ex-Blue Jay. He last year was the third base coach for the Seattle Mariners, and he has now moved over to the Dodgers. So he is managing that World Baseball Classic team for New Zealand. So I'm torn. You know, I'm going to say this. Honestly, in terms of sports, I don't necessarily have teams, all right? You know, I've got a soft spot for maybe the Blue Jays and the Oilers and, you know, the Eskimos, teams that I've actually had my hands on and been involved with. I've got a soft spot for those teams, but man, I just want to see good sport. This is going to be great. And I like the whole idea and the concept of the World Baseball Classic. This is the first qualifying tournament. Listen, there's 12 of the 16 teams that are going to be in the next World Baseball Classic are already solidified. And there's 4 qualifying tournaments that are going to designate the last 4 teams. And this is a big one. Down in Sydney, we have Australia, who's probably the favorite there. And we have New Zealand, the Philippines, and South Africa. So South Africa is up against it, but they have some great pro players. So, you know, I can't say that I'm cheering for anybody. We'll see who comes out of that one. But I'm excited for the World Baseball Classic qualifier.
Yeah, it's a cool event, I think. And, you know, especially a chance to put some of these players who might not get any or as much attention. You're kind of putting them up on a platform, and you know, there's got to be some scouts there watching this, trying to find the next big thing from a country that maybe isn't the most typical baseball powerhouse.
Well, then that's one of the things that happens with this qualifier, right? There's a great player profiling project going on, and these players will get seen. Players that might not be scouted or might not necessarily be on the radar can put themselves in the radar in one or two games here. So exciting times, and that is kicking off here 5 minutes ago, just as we kick off our show. So very, very timely. And of course, you know, when we talk about the major sporting events, Connor, I don't think there's a bigger event than the Super Bowl. It might be, you know, and I think it is, if you think about it, it is the most lucrative single day sporting event on the calendar. And if you look at the numbers, there's no question about it. What did you think of the game?
I was surprised by it. I thought that the Carolina Panthers came out with a very basic game plan. I don't think they really utilized Cam Newton the way they really fully could have. He only rushed the ball six times. When you're playing a team like Denver, whose pass rushers, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, they're going downhill. And I feel like they just kind of played into their hands. I feel like Carolina could have mixed in a few screen passes, a few draws, you know, get those guys kind of to draw back a little bit. But all in all, you got to give credit to the Broncos. I mean, Peyton Manning did all he had to do, only threw 13 passes. They found a way to run the ball with CJ Anderson, and credit to Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator. He put together one heck of a game plan to shut down arguably the game's most dynamic player in Cam Newton.
Here's the thing about football, okay, and I agree with you. I agree with that summary for sure. I watched the game. It was interesting. I had my own little Super Bowl party, so to speak. But inside of a football game, if you've never broken down the numbers, this is interesting, okay? They're predicting that there was over $15.3 billion spent on Super Bowl-related expenditures, food, booze, apparel, and also that included betting and everything. It's an economy in itself. But if you break down the game of baseball, right, there's four 15-minute quarters, 60 minutes of football, okay? The average game lasts about 3 hours, 12 minutes is what they say. But here's the interesting thing, okay? There's only 11 minutes of play inside of an NFL football game. Okay, the broadcaster spends 17 minutes on replays, but the average play only lasts 4 seconds. And if you break it down in terms of how much money they generate in what's really 11 minutes of play, it is an absolute study of economy in terms of sport and you know, when it comes to, you know, the finances of the game.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you mentioned just that the consumption of time, and every time you run the ball or you complete a pass and it doesn't go out of bounds, or there's not a timeout, it's almost a 40-second runoff for the play clock. So, you know, when you have Denver running the ball about 30 times, Carolina only does it about, you know, 25, but 40 seconds each time there if he's staying in bounds. You're right, there's not too much time actually being played football.
No, it's a big deal. Do you know how much in 2006, do you know how much a 30-second ad cost in the 2006 Super Bowl?
More than I'll make in my lifetime.
You're right, and me as well. $2.5 million. This last year, a 30-second commercial cost an advertiser $4.4 million, an increase of 46%. They generated $345 million just in commercial revenue inside of the game.
You know, you can question Roger Goodell for how he's handled a lot of things, but from the business side alone, he's done wonders for those owners. Coincidentally, the guys who pay his paycheck.
And that's why he's there, and there's no question. And he has very lofty goals. By 2026, he wants revenues exceeding $20 billion. This year, they broke the $12 billion mark. They're up this last year by 14.2%. In 2014, the NFL generated $10.5 billion. It's estimated, the numbers aren't all in yet, but it's estimated this year they will break the $12 billion mark. It is a massive sporting industry unto itself.
Yeah, that's extremely unbelievable. And, you know, I've questioned him a lot for his decisions dealing with player suspensions, things of that nature. But, you know, there's no denying business-wise, he's a smart man and he's got a great product right now that's going to, you know, it's hard to think that he won't get to that $20 billion projection.
Yeah, they're driving the game for sure. Part of that money and revenue that we saw this year in terms of the Super Bowl was generated through gambling. There was about $132 million bet on the Super Bowl this year, which doesn't sound like a lot. But listen, that's only the legal stuff. The American Gambling Association estimates that there was $4.2 billion in illegal betting around the Super Bowl. And that is a big number, ladies and gentlemen. So interesting stuff. And that brings us to our text question of the day. Here's some interesting stats. We're going to get on with the show. We're going to look at, are we doing enough to protect athletes inside of the sport. The concussion numbers are up 58% from last year. There was 182 regular season concussions reported last year, and that's a big number. And that brings us to the idea that the average playing career in the NFL is 3.3 years. If you look at the revenues that is generated, the average career is only 3.3 years long. It's great work if you can get it. Do you think athletes are getting paid too much? That's our text question of the day, 10-12-60. It's a big business and the players are getting paid well. It's great work. Do you think athletes in general get paid too much? That's a text question of the day, brought to you by Sherwood Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep. And we have two great prize packs. We're going to give away two Marmot lift passes and a $25 hospitality gift certificate to the Best Western Jasper Inn and Suites. We're going to pick two people from our live text pool today to win those. So get in there. Let us know. Do you think athletes get paid too much? Or are they getting paid just right? That's a good conversation. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Crush favorite Dr. Martin Mrazek. We're getting at it with concussions in sport, reporting, 58% increase in the regular season in terms of the NFL. What do you need to know? Find out next here on Crush Performance. Stick around. Once you commit yourself to the world of sport performance, it doesn't turn off. It's always coming at you, and you have to be ready to respond. That's sport performance. But how do you put it all together to get the results you need? Now you can learn how as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, a program designed to help athletes navigate the world of sport performance and athlete development to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. The Sport Matrix. For more information, go to crushperformance.com.
Listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, do exactly that. Crushperformance.com. Everything is there. Hey, we're talking the wrap up of the NFL season here today. We got into some of the stats and the amount of money that is the NFL. It is certainly, it could be a global, independent global economy unto itself. Generating almost $12 billion, it's predicted this last year, up from last year's $10.5 billion. So the game is strong. And, coming out of one of the biggest recessions in recent history, that's pretty impressive. The world of sport is impressive. There's a lot of money involved. And that brought on our text question of the day. Text 10-12-60 if you want to get in on the action. We've got a couple great Jasper Marmot Basin, Best Western, Jasper Inn and Suite prize packs to give away. But the question is, it's great work if you can get it. Are athletes getting paid too much? And here's a text coming in. I think athletes get paid way too much. Their salaries drive prices for tickets and merchandise. And also, hey, Crusher, they're paid extremely well. But nowadays, a lot of pro athletes have spent their entire lives training. There's been a huge sacrifice they had to make and they still have to make if they're going to stay in the game. And I agree with that. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. So get in your two cents if you'd like. Are athletes getting paid too much or do you think it's just right? Again, the average NFL career is 3.3 years this year. And, we could look at all the different sports. There's not a lot of time to make that money. And it is, we don't like using the word sacrifice when we work with our pro athletes, because we've got some of those athletes that are, that we work with that are making hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a commitment and they've done something to make themselves special. So that's pretty interesting. Also, some interesting numbers coming out of the NFL last year were the number of head injuries. And if we look at it, the NFL reported 182 regular season concussions last year, which is up 58% over the previous year. And that doesn't include preseason and some of the offseason practices that they had. We're joined now by Crush favorite Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist and associate professor at the University of Alberta. Dr. Mrazek, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here as always.
Well, we're wrapping up, of course, our look at the NFL and the magnificent display that is the Super Bowl. But some interesting numbers coming out of the NFL this year when we look at head injuries. And, of course, we know that they're really pushing to increase player safety. But to see a 58% increase in regular season concussions, reported concussions at 182, and even more if we include the preseason, there's a lot of concern about that number. And I'm not sure that we're viewing this the right way. Is it necessarily a bad number?
Yeah, I mean, statistics are interesting because they don't always tell us what we want to know. And the question is this just a blip in the radar? And for example, in the NHL in 1999, 2000, they had 66 concussions, and the next year they had 109. And then they saw the numbers drop to about 80-some the next year. So there's always these questions. But two things have happened in the last year that, you know, may partially explain this, Jeff. One of them is that they have the independent medical examiners on the sidelines. So they've never done that before. Plus, every stadium this past year had two sets of eyes from different vantage points on the field. So there's certainly more attention than ever. And, of course, there's been a lot of scrutiny about concussions. But there's certainly more attention than ever that's being given to it. So it does lead you to the question, well, maybe we're just a lot more attentive to it. And I agree with you is that maybe this is a good thing. People sometimes think this is a bad thing, but maybe this is the new normal. This is what's actually going on. And in the past, we've just never really identified this many concussions, or they've, you know, some have escaped the medical examination. So I'm not necessarily, I'm convinced like you are that I think this is probably a good thing.
We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist at the University of Alberta. Well, I tend to agree with you there. I don't think these numbers are necessarily bad. And I think it has a lot to do maybe with the awareness campaigns that we're having. But also, I think, could this be an indication that players are maybe a little more conscious of how serious these injuries can be long term, but how well they can be monitored and assessed, and maybe how quickly they can recover from them if they're dealt with properly right from the get-go?
Yeah, and I agree is that I think certainly in the mindset of the athlete, like at first it's like prove to me that this is actually a good thing. And then when you look at the recovery rates and the fact that, you know, I know in the NHL and the CFL, there's been fewer second concussions within the same season. I don't have those exact numbers from the NFL, but that's also a good thing because that tells you that maybe waiting that little bit extra is actually reducing the number of duplicate concussions or players that have multiple concussions in a season. So that's important. That tells us that players are paying much more attentive. And I also think that maybe we're just getting a little smarter in terms of identifying them. You know, I remember a few years ago when Peyton Manning made the comment that he cheated on his baseline test so he could get by if he got a concussion. And certainly, you know, the response to that has been good, is that we're much more attentive to those variables, like players, you know, maybe doing poorly on their baseline testing. So I think all that's good. And I agree that I think this is not necessarily a bad thing.
Sometimes when we get new information, especially when it's important and meaningful information, we tend to overdo it a little bit. And I'm not saying we can overdo the conversation when it comes to head injuries and concussions and athlete safety inside of sport. But sometimes we might overshoot the mark. I wonder when it comes to CTE, if we haven't done exactly that. But I sometimes wonder if we clearly understand the relationship between CTE, brain injuries, and the long-term health of athletes.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, is because we don't know a lot. We've seen the worst case scenarios, but then, you know, today, you know, previous NHL enforcer Ewan, he was, you know, they looked at his brain and there was no evidence of CTE. So there is a trend, like if we look at the, you know, in the media, to say that, you know, CTE is kind of a conclusion of multiple concussions. And I think there's a lot of caution from the scientific community to say that that's actually the case. However, in the, you know, Canadian Medical Journal this past year, they did find that individuals with multiple concussions are also a much higher risk for mental health concerns and suicide in their later life. So it does tell us that this is one of the important variables that can go into people not doing well. How much of a contribution does it have to actual CTE? Well, you know, that's where I think, and I really believe we have to be cautious about that, because we just don't know enough about that.
Well, we've heard some comments saying that, you know, as many as 90% of the players who play professional football have some form of the disease. And, you know, we've also heard speculations about where it shows up and who's going to get it. And I guess it's really put a cloud of fear over top of the game. And I do believe football is suffering. If you look at the numbers at the developmental levels, they're down. And there's been some interesting polls and surveys saying that parents just aren't too interested in having their kids play these contact sports anymore. Dr. Mrazek, do you think we're doing enough to protect the athlete and enough to raise the awareness in terms of player safety in the contact sports like football?
You know, if you were asked me honestly, I would say yes. I think we are doing a lot in the education message, and the fact that, you know, baseline testing has become mandatory in all 50 states and is becoming just a commonplace in Canada, and making sure that players are aware of concussions. And so I definitely think that the commitment that's there has has been really good. I mean, there's always more that you can do, and I think at the individual level, there's probably parents and coaches that may not always make the best decision. But I, you know, if we just look at the numbers overall, I mean, it does tell us that there's been some very effective education campaigns, and that more people are seeing doctors and so on to get cleared before concussions. So I really think that's important. I mean, the one thing that we don't have right now is just the actual longitudinal studies, and I know the NFL is currently underway for funding some of these studies, but for example, in the lay population compared to individuals who played football at the NFL level, there's only a small percentage point difference in rates of dementia than there is compared to the lay population. So even though there is this risk of CTE, NFL players, so this is documented, outlive the lay population by a couple years, and they only have slightly higher incidence of CTE. Now, obviously, do we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to mitigate those risks? Well, I think so. And to me, the important one is really looking and making sure that athletes with a history of multiple concussions are given extra scrutiny, because, in my opinion, just the repeated history of concussion seems to be a variable that we can't ignore, and is probably the most compelling factor to say that it may have a pretty significant contribution to mental health issues later in life.
We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist at the University of Alberta. And, you know, we look at this, you know, one thing we're looking into now, I've officially waged war on sugar. And, you know, we're not just looking at it in terms of diabetes and obesity. We're also looking at it in terms of its impact on sport performance. And we're also now really getting into some of the science that shows the relationship between sugar and dementia and brain diseases. Yeah. So there's this big clouded area that, you know, we're just not sure. But if you put all of this into a big picture, we know we just have to raise awareness. And I think we've done a good job of that. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's a very important point. How much does diet contribute to all this? Because a high sugar diet, I mean, even in short term, they've done studies where, giving animals the same average American diet of sugar impairs their learning and memory. So, like in 6 weeks, they were showing that rats were significantly impaired compared to a normal diet. So there's no question that sugar in high dosages, and maybe it's one of those contributing factors that we haven't paid enough attention to, that really kind of adds to the problems that are caused by injuries and that are caused by concussions.
Well, the story continues. Dr. Mrazek, we appreciate your time today. We'll look forward to talking to you maybe towards the middle of March as the NHL season winds down. We'll get deeper into the discussion of player safety and head injuries in sport.
That sounds great.
There you go. We got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we love it when technology impacts sport, even more when it means better player safety. Coming up, we'll talk with Dr. Samuel Broud, Seahawks sideline neurologist and co-founder of Visus, the makers of the new 01 helmet, where technology meets sport and player safety, right after this on Crush Performance.
Once you commit yourself to the world of sport performance, it doesn't turn off. It's always coming at you, and you have to be ready to respond. That's sport performance, adapting and rising to everything sport can throw at you. And now you can learn how as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, a program designed to help athletes navigate the world of sport performance and athlete development to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. The Sport Matrix. For more information, go to crushperformance.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
I'm not going to lie to you. I am excited for the NBA All-Star Game. First time in Canada. It's going to be a big one. We're not talking about that today. We're talking about the NFL, but I had to mention that because I'm pretty excited about it as we look at all the great sporting events that are coming down the pipeline here. And of course, the Super Bowl is the main conversation today in terms of the revenue and the crazy stats around that, but also coming out of the NFL, looking at player injuries, concussion, and player safety is a big conversation. The number of reported concussions last season is up 58% at 182 regular season concussions, and even more if you include the preseason. So it's an interesting discussion. The NFL generated over $12 billion of revenue last season. It's a massive sporting industry coming out of one of the greatest recessions that we've seen in recent history. The text question of the day, 10-12-60. Get in. We have two Marmot Basin lift passes and a $25 hospitality gift certificate at the Best Western Jasper Inn and Suites for our live listeners. You can use that at the Inn Grill. Fantastic menu there at the Inn Grill, so you can use that. We actually have two of those to give away today, so we're going to be picking two people from our text pool to win those prizes. It's great work if you can get it. Do you think athletes are getting paid too much? The average salary in the NFL is $2.2 million. The NBA, by the way, has the highest player salary. Major League Baseball, followed by the NHL, and then the NBA in terms of North American sports. A couple of texts here. Crush, sports and entertainment are... here it is. Sports are like entertainment. It's like going to the movies. The best athletes get paid far less than the top movie stars. That's from Chris. And Chris, you're absolutely right. I heard this stat about Shrek 3. And who did the princess's voice? Cameron Diaz, right? She got paid $10 million to voice a cartoon princess. So get it in there. Honestly, I do think they make too much, but it's a matter of supply and demand. They're part of a very small portion of our population capable of providing entertainment and demand. So get those texts in. Well, we were also talking about player safety and the concussion side of things. And we're joined now by Dr. Broud. He's a sideline neurologist for the Seahawks and co-founder of Visus, who have developed an incredible new helmet called the Zero One. Dr. Broud, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, this is a very timely conversation for a number of reasons. Athlete health in general is sort of one of the main topics coming out of the sport performance world. And when it comes to head injuries, of course, it's on everybody's mind. We see it in hockey. We see it in soccer, certainly in the snow sports, but nowhere else like the game of football. Maybe to start this conversation off, we could sort of maybe paint a picture of what we're dealing with when it comes to what's really happening in the game of contact sports like American football.
Well, you know, I end up taking care of kids through the concussion program at Seattle Children's. And, you know, we see kids come in through the program who've been concussed in a variety of sports. And you know, as you mentioned, football has been standing out as one of the sports that has, you know, high concussion rate that we all think is unacceptable. And that's sort of been, you know, part of the desire for us to create something better, which is where this helmet idea came out of. But yeah, it's a challenging thing. And, you know, we're seeing kids come in from various sports, but football is certainly an outlier in that regard.
Well, Visus has an interesting take on things, and I really appreciate it when technology comes into sport to enhance not just performance, but certainly player safety. And one of the slogans you guys have on the website, which is Visus, V-I-C-I-S.co, Visus.co, is not a sporting good company, a technology company, engineering, medicine, and sport coming together, you know, with breakthrough thinking. And I like this whole approach to what you guys are trying to accomplish here, and it seems to be working really, really well.
Yeah, you know, we thought we had a really unique opportunity to sit down. I work at a great research university, University of Washington, and, you know, through my clinical practice, I saw these kids. It seemed like there was an opportunity to do something. We've been, you know, really looking at, you know, rules, changes in the game and legislation in the state to pull kids out if we're worried about concussion. But there hasn't been a huge focus on changing the equipment, which I have felt is sort of the third tier of trying to improve the safety of not just football, but other sports. And so what we ended up doing was sitting down with the chair of mechanical engineering at the university. His name's Per Reinhall. He's a Swedish guy, actually. And we sat down and said, you know, if we looked at the state of our medical knowledge right now and what's the best engineering practices that we could apply, what would we do differently? And so we had this really unique opportunity to start from scratch and try and build out this helmet. And a big component of what that was is also talking to people who are out there, the players, coaches, equipment managers. Everybody's got very strong feelings and ideas about what would improve the safety of football in particular. And so the project ultimately became not just, you know, the science and engineering piece, but also listening to, you know, what concerns were out there. Things like just even taking the football helmet off if you're worried about an injury, it's challenging to do. And, you know, we've tried to integrate in all of these different things as we built the helmet out.
We're talking with Dr. Samuel Broud, co-founder of Visus and also the medical director of the Seattle Children's Sport Concussion Program. So you're coming from a really strong background in terms of head injuries, which is important, especially when you guys put this technology together. You guys have amassed an incredible team. And I like to look at the, you know, the holistic, I guess,
situation that's going on in sport in general. Do you think the game is in danger? We're seeing sort of enrollment in the Pop Warner going down. We're seeing athletes at the professional level retire early. And one of the main concerns from parents and the players who are retiring are the long-term issues when it comes to head injuries. So do you think the game is in danger unless we make some real advances here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're all having these conversations at home, right? I have a 5-year-old son who seems to be interested in football, and my wife and I have this conversation routinely. I think, you know, the concern with football is the numbers are outside of the way I'd like to talk about it, what the median is. Every sport has concussion risk, right? And right. What we want to ultimately see with football is that the risk is brought back toward the median so that people feel comfortable playing. And I think that there's a legitimate, you know, discussion that's going on about the risk of playing. When's it appropriate to have youth athletes start to engage in contact sports? I think these are all very healthy, you know, conversations that are necessary, and the science and understanding of concussion is changing. And so, you know, we're really learning as we're going what's the right approach and the best way to do this. And so, you know, I think we're evolving, and if safety products or other things can be brought in place that can reframe what the risk of concussion is, I think that's going to allow football to go on. But I think it's an important conversation we're all having now, you know, it's just happening in my own home.
Yeah, and it is in mine as well. We're talking with Dr. Samuel Broud, co-founder of Visus and the associate professor of neurological surgery at the University of Washington. On the website, visus.co, you guys have a fantastic video, and it is spectacular, by the way. But you show some of the engineering, evaluations you do, and you talk about the advances that we see in the automotive industry with crumple zones and airbags and crash test dummies. And yet we're so far behind when it comes to maybe something that's even more important, that's protecting the head in sport.
Yeah, you know, again, as we started out on this project, we went back through and started to look at the evolution of helmet technology. And if you look, things are pretty static. There hasn't been a lot of innovation and, you know, really even since the 70s. And as we started to look into it, there's been a lot of technology applied in the space of, you know, automotive safety. So, you know, the car itself has this occupancy zone where there's a hard shell around the passengers, and then the perimeter of the car crumples if there's an accident or something's going on. And, you know, those type of technologies have been advanced over the years to where, you know, car safety is as good as it's been, you know, pretty much in the history of the automotive industry. So we looked at some of the techniques and principles that they used and started to think that this would be a good way to approach designing the helmet. And so the helmet for your listeners, if they look at the website, they'll be able to see sort of how it works. But the idea is that the helmet itself is deformable. It kind of used the analogy of a car bumper. So it can take an impact and then bounce back into position. And that energy is redistributed across the helmet so it doesn't make its way to the player's head to as large a degree.
We're talking with Dr. Samuel Broud of Visus. Well, the helmet is fantastic. And again, the video really does show how it works. But I like the whole process you have put together here in terms of how this helmet's put together. If we were to start, as you mentioned, on the outside, you guys have come up with a soft shell. And if we could go from the outside working in, this is a pretty fascinating piece of technology. And not only does it help with the direct head-on impacts, you guys have also spent a lot of time considering and looking at the rotational forces, which are certainly a major concern when it comes to head injuries and brain injury.
Yeah, no. So like you're saying, we really sat down first with the scientific literature and tried to understand, you know, what's going on to create concussion. And the leading thought at the moment is these rotational forces. So there's two types of impact. There's linear, where you're basically head-to-head contact. But glancing blows or tangential blows are thought to be a more likely culprit to cause concussion. And the current helmets don't deal well with that type of force. So what we ended up doing was building out a four-layered system in the helmet. So the outer shell is very thin, feels hard to the touch, but is ultimately deformable, but you can paint it. The second layer is really the core layer of the technology. It has these columns, and engineering principles around columns go back, you know, centuries, basically. But the idea is that the column can take some degree of force, and then it starts to bend, and that absorbs the energy that's coming in. And the way the helmet's designed is those columns bend and then come back in that position. Like, to use the analogy of a toothbrush, you know, if you put your thumb on it, you can, with enough force, get the bristles to bend. But you can also slide your thumb over the toothbrush and it'll move back and forth. And that's the concept with the helmet, to absorb some of the energy. The third layer is a hard shell. And this goes back to what helmets were originally developed for. So current helmets were designed to prevent skull fractures and catastrophic brain injuries, things in my world that we call subdural hemorrhages, epidural hemorrhages. They do a fine job at that. But again, they weren't really designed for concussion mitigation, but we have that layer to provide that protection. Then we have under that, this lining, which is custom fit, and we can talk a bit about that too. We've spent a lot of time understanding how the helmet should fit, what various head sizing is in the NFL, military data, because if the helmet doesn't fit, then you're not going to be able to take advantage of the other technologies that are put in the helmet.
We're talking with Dr. Samuel Broud from Visus. The website is visus.co. Well, let's talk about that fit system, because this is very important. And, you know, we see this sort of coming into play now. We see it in construction helmets, and we see it in, you know, some of the military helmets, as you mentioned. But you guys have sort of taken it one step farther when you really analyze a sort of a custom fit technology that can be used on individual players.
Yeah. No, we thought it was really important to look at helmet sizing. So current helmets, really, there's, you know, small, medium, large, XL. And if you look at the way helmets are fit now, it's actually pretty ridiculous. We were over at our local NFL team, the Seahawks, and talking to the guys. And, you know, a player like Russell Wilson, who makes $20 million a year, is buying the same helmet that you would get at any local sporting goods store. And if it doesn't fit, what they do is they shim it with extra padding, or they pump up these air bladders, and the helmets are very uncomfortable and often don't fit well. So we took military data from NFL teams, and really reconfigured the sizing regimen. So we have 8 different initial sizing categories, and then the custom liner. So the helmets are actually very comfortable, fit very well.
We're talking with Dr. Samuel Broud from Visus. Well, the current thinking out there is, you know, helmets don't prevent concussions, but they can help reduce concussions. There is an incredibly powerful visual on your website in that video where you have the two helmets that are crashing down. You have your helmet and then sort of a typical helmet that's being used in the game right now. And if you watch the center of the nose of the crash test dummy in there, in your helmet, the nose doesn't move in relationship to the mouth guard or the face guard. But in the other one, the head is bouncing around inside of the helmet. And I thought, Dr. Broud, that is a real powerful statement right there as to the potential of this technology inside of sport.
Yeah, no, it's interesting watching the video, and I agree. You can see the difference between the head form in our helmet and, you know, one of the leading helmets that's on the market today. To go back to one of the things that you said, you know, we're never going to reduce or eliminate concussions completely, but the goal for us has been to reduce these forces that we think are associated with the risk of concussion. There have been some studies in the neurosurgery literature that suggest if you reduce the force by even as little as 5%, in one study they saw a 40% drop in the concussion risk. So all these things are going to have to be borne out over time, and, you know, really trying to take a very scientific approach to this. But we're optimistic because we're seeing in the laboratory reductions in forces that range anywhere from 20 to 50%. So we think we can really optimize this helmet. And at the end of the day, we're hopeful that this is going to lead to improvements in the safety of the game.
Dr. Broud, isn't it interesting when we look at the number of reported concussions? Last year was the highest year. And some people, for some people, that's a raise or raising concern. For others, and for myself personally, I think this is just the way the game should be going. I think we've raised awareness to the point where everybody's comfortable talking about it. Players know that it needs to be addressed properly. And if it is addressed properly, the chances of returning safely are incredibly great. So I think we're on a good trend here. We add in technology like this, and we're really doing something special for sport.
Yeah, I you know, do the it's called the UNC, Unaffiliated Neurologic Consultant. So I do that role on the sidelines in Seattle for both the Seahawks and the visiting teams. And, you know, I've done it since the inception of the program. This is the third year that it had been in place. And there's just a cultural change that I think has happened on the sidelines. The first year, I don't think I was asked to evaluate a single player. This year, every single game, I'm looking at somebody. And we've pulled a bunch of people. The players are much more in tune with it. And I think they're acknowledging, you know, the fact that if they did get concussed or, you know, feel a little weird or whatever after a play, that they're more inclined to sit out. And the team docs are much more in tune with things. And so the reason the number went up, and this is, again, my personal opinion on this, is that we're just being much more vigilant than we have been in the past. I don't think the concussion rate probably has gone up. I think it's just we're recognizing it and people are willing to come out of the game. I mean, I was on the Seahawks side for the game when Ben Roethlisberger decided to pull himself out of the game. He self-reported symptoms after a play. It wasn't something that was noticeable with the play to the team docs, but, you know, he had a hit or something that made him feel symptomatic and he pulled himself out. So there's a real cultural change that's occurring, and I think that's for the better.
It certainly is, and that's a powerful statement. And it's things like that that will trickle down to the grassroots of the game where, you know, this stuff really, really matters. Dr. Broud, where are we at with the Vysis helmet in terms of getting it into the marketplace and accessible to everybody who should be using it, I guess?
Yeah, no. So we had our official debut, if you will, about 2 weeks ago. And so we're ramping up manufacturing at this point. We're going to be in OTAs and practice for the NFL and Division I NCAA teams in the States just in the next couple months. And our plan is to be on players in the NFL and in high-level NCAA teams, college teams, for this coming season.
Dr. Broud, do you foresee the technology here moving into hockey and the snow sports and other, I guess, genres of sport where this could, you know, really help improve athlete safety?
Yeah, and our hope is that, you know, the core technology can be applied, you know, to really any sport. Every sport's, you know, their helmets have unique features and other, you know, design parameters that are different, certainly, than football. But the core technology we're anticipating going into these other sports, we're really focused on the helmet and optimizing and learning the most that we can about our own technology at the moment, but we're definitely planning to go into other sports. I mean, hockey, obviously a huge thing in Canada and in the States too. There's just a clear need for a better helmet. And some of the technology that's out there, you know, I start to look at it now and it's just, there's so much room for improvement. So we're hoping to certainly go into these other sports in the next, you know, very few years, I would say, and start to bring the technology to these other areas.
The slogan is protect the athlete, elevate the game. The website, Vysis.co, Vysis.co. Dr. Broud, thank you for your time today. Listen, we appreciate what you and your entire team are doing to improve player safety, and we'll watch with great interest as we move forward.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
There you go. Technology improving player safety. There's nothing like it. You know how much we love that stuff on Crush Performance. And if you get a chance, go to their website and check out that video. It's all powerful. So there you go. Improving player safety. A great show. Got to thank Dr. Martin Mrazek, neurologist from the University of Alberta, talking about the concussion numbers that came out of the NFL. And also Dr. Broud, again, sideline neurologist for the Seahawks and a co-founder of Vysis. Great stuff. Next week, stay tuned. We're talking PEDs in sport after the Horkoff suspension and the suspension of the entire Russian Athletic Federation. We're going to talk with the director general of WADA, and we're going to look at, should we be legalizing drugs in sport? A slippery slope. Next week on Crush Performance, talk to you then.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.